tips for writing from various experts on campus, and today's expert is Shannon Valenzuela, who is teaching in the English department, and she will be, I don't have your title.
Pre-writing and revision.
Pre-writing and revision is going to be her topic. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, pre-writing and revision. So I didn't come up with a really super, like, high, you know, colon title, you know, fancy. Pre-writing and revision. So it's meant to be practical, meant to be hopefully helpful, sort of by way of introduction. I'm a writer. Since I graduated from UD years ago, many years ago, we'll just say lots of years ago, I've done almost every kind of writing that there is to do. I've done academic writing, of course. I've done advertising and marketing copy. I've done blogging. I've done ghostwriting. I've done novels. I've done screenplays. I've done articles and journals and magazines, interviews, just about everything. And I've also worked as an editor, proofreader with other writers, so developmental editing, and all different levels, all different types of writing, from, you know, book-length manuscripts to articles and things like that. So I've kind of been around the block or two with the writing, and I love it, which is why I'm up here talking about pre-writing and revision, which, you know, is kind of the most boring stuff to talk about, I suppose. But I love the process. I love everything about the process. So I wanted to talk to you about those two things, because in my experience, what tends to set apart really outstanding writing that's highly successful from writing that's not quite as successful is effective pre-writing and really, really good solid editing and rewriting. So those are the things that I really wanted to talk about today. So just raise your hand if you've heard of a little process called brainstorming real quickly. Yeah, okay, everybody's heard of brainstorming. And who thinks that brainstorming is probably something that we should do, probably should try to do occasionally when you write? Yeah, good. I won't make you keep your hand up if you actually do brainstorming before you write. We'll just not do that. Okay. But we can all agree that it's something that probably ought to be done. So what I want to do today is to kind of give you some practical tools to take away. Different methods of pre-writing, different methods of editing that hopefully will help you not just here at UD, but when you go out into the world, whatever your chosen line of profession is, because we need to remember that the goal of essay writing here is to teach you to become an effective communicator, persuasive, powerful, compelling communicator, not just in an academic sense, but in the world, whatever your profession, whatever your line of work is going to be. All right, so let's talk about brainstorming, which tends to be synonymous with pre-writing, but it really is kind of its own thing. So for most of you, brainstorming, probably when you studied it, looked like, you know, this. You're going to start with your topic in the middle of the page, right? So we might say, Hector, the leader. And then from there, we're going to draw all of these little connections, right? Little circles. Looks like an alien mothership when you're done with it, right? And then we're going to start connecting, right? So you end up with something called a mind map. For those of you who have done brainstorming like this, right, mind mapping, usually what ends up happening after this process is we're supposed to take these connections, we're supposed to take these clusters of things and develop an outline. If you're doing this for a class, like in high school, they probably wanted you to do an alphanumeric outline, right? Big letter number one, A, you know, et cetera, right, where you're breaking down your topic. And there was a prescribed way of doing that. Funneling in, usually tied to the five-paragraph essay. Yes, is this sounding familiar? This is brainstorming. No, well, yeah, but it's not pre-writing in an all-inclusive sense. And if pre-writing, when I say pre-writing, you feel a little like nauseous and you want to get up and leave, it's probably because this process doesn't work for you very well. Nothing wrong with it if it does, but there are other ways, right? There's other ways. Okay, so there's nothing wrong with doing this. If you're a visual person, a mind map can be a great tool. An alphanumeric outline, if you're a highly logical thinker, can be a great tool. I'm not dissing the outline, and I'm not dissing the mind map, right? The thing is that often we don't allow a process to develop and grow organically with you as a writer, as an individual. and what works for you and how you learn and how you think. Last week, I think Ms. Hardy talked about free writing in her talk on refining your thesis statement. I think she talked a little bit about free writing. Free writing is another method of brainstorming, pre-writing, okay? Free writing can be excellent if you're one of those people who think by writing out, right? If you just need to like write out the topic, you've got to just, you want to talk about Hector as leader, so I need to like write it all out. Whatever comes to my mind, I'm going to write out. I found that this to be very effective for creative writing because oftentimes you'll come up with a concept, you need to map it out. It can also work for academic writing the same way. If you're one of those people, as I said, who work by writing out. What I see often happen is that the writing out and the exploring of the topic happens in the paper. And so the pre-writing that I'm getting to my topic, I'm getting to that kernel, the thing that I really want to talk about, as I'm writing my paper. And I get to it in the conclusion, and I'm done. And I hand that in. But I'm not done, I've just started. That's my pre-writing. I've just now gotten to, oh, that aha moment of I just arrived at what I want to say. That is the kernel of what I want to talk about. From arriving at that kernel, and you can usually feel it when it happens. It's kind of this cool thing. You know, the light bulb sort of goes off. If you've had that experience where you just kind of, you're like, oh, I see. And it's like everything just crystallizes for you. If you've had that happen, then you know what I'm talking about. We work from that insight then to the argument. We build out, okay, and then we can start pulling in the textual research Ms. Hardy talked about last week. Looking at the text, going to find connections, looking at passages, looking at parallels in the text, and building from there to an argument. So we move from insight to argument in that kind of way. And the free writing is designed to get your brain moving, okay, to just get you thinking and writing out whatever comes to your mind. It's similar to this. Same kind of idea. Again, we're just dropping whatever comes to mind, but we're doing it in a different way. Okay? So free writing, though, highly unstructured. If you're not a person who likes unstructured, like if the idea of writing a journal kind of freaks you out a little bit, this may not be a method that might work for you. And that's okay. That's why we have other ways of doing things, right? So visual mind mapping can be effective. If you are sort of a highly creative, you like to just get in the flow, free writing can really work well. Free writing can work well. But there are almost as many ways to pre-write effectively as there are writers. And you kind of need to learn by trying different things out what process is going to work best for you. So this is your encouragement to, if this is how you were taught to brainstorm and pre-write, this is your permission to toss that if it doesn't work for you well. Okay, and if pre-write, if this makes you feel allergic to pre-writing, then toss it, okay? Do something different. Okay, so what other ways can you use? Asking questions. And I think Dr. Baldwin brought this up last week as well, like start with a question with your topic, you know, so you're handed a sheet with topics on it. Ask questions of your topic. Describe it. Break it down into its parts. Consider what makes your topic interesting to you. This is something that also tends to happen. Academic writing, we feel, okay, I've got to choose one of these topics. And I need to be very sort of precise and sort of very not emotionally invested in what I'm writing about. But I would encourage you, when you're handed a sheet with a bunch of topics on it, find the one that makes you light up when you talk to your friends about it at the cat bar. What is the one that you want to talk about, that you have a lot to say? And I find that for different people, different people will be attracted to different types of topics. So find the one that will really ignite your interest. Why are you emotionally connected to that concept? What is your investment in that concept? Okay, so ask yourself that. It's important to ask yourself that. Are you invested? I can tell, like, and I'm sure Dr. Baldwin, other professors, they can tell when you are like lit up by a topic. It comes through in your writing, it really does. If you are not inspired by your topic, it absolutely comes through. And that's okay. You can still turn in a solid piece of work, it's fine, but there's a difference. It's like boosting it a notch. when you're inspired by the topic. Okay, so don't be afraid to go with that. Go with your feeling on that. Okay, considering what other subjects are related to yours. So for instance, if I'm talking about Hector as a leader in the Iliad, and I want to consider, okay, how could I approach this from a different angle? Let me come up with some different ways. Maybe I decide that the related topic of fatherhood in the Iliad might be a great way to kind of give me my angle into this topic of leadership, right? So I want to consider models of fatherhood and come from there into my topic of leadership, okay? That's a related topic, and I can kind of, by working with related topics, sometimes you can find a unique take on a topic, Hector as leader, Hector as a hero. Okay, that's like, you know, that's a very standard topic, but if you can come up with a unique take on it, a new way to view the topic, that can make for a very successful analysis. Okay, other questions you can ask. Journalism questions. Okay, your 5 W's and the H, right? Who, when, why, where, what, and how. Simply to get the situation, you know, sort of nailed down, okay? And above all, the question why. Why? Never stop asking yourself the question why. Why should the reader be invested in this topic? Why are you invested in this topic? Why should the reader accept your interpretation? Why and how and where does the text support your interpretation? Okay? Why? Whenever you feel like you're stuck, uh-oh, I'm at word 500, I need 250 more words to make my goal, I'm stuck, I have nothing more to say, start asking yourself why. Why? Go back through your paragraphs. Go to your topic sentences. Why is this critically important for me to say this here? Why is it important for the reader to know? Okay, go to the why. Okay, so asking questions, another kind of a logical approach to a topic. Okay, so if you like breaking things down and you like questioning things and you like inquiry, that can be an effective way of sort of getting your mind moving on a topic. Another way to approach that in sort of a logical way is a process called cubing for the shape, right? Cubing. And I won't try to draw one because I don't draw. Six-sided consideration, okay, of a topic. Six sides. We want to consider, we want to take our topic, and we want to consider the arguments for and against. So that would be the first side, if you will. What's the argument for? What's my argument against? Anytime you can understand both sides of a question, it's going to strengthen your argument, by the way. Okay. Anytime you can handle the opposing viewpoint in a masterful way, it's going to strengthen your topic. So that's a good thing to do anyway. You can describe, and we've talked a little bit about that, describe what goes into your topic, who's involved, okay, what's the setting, what are we discussing? We talked a little bit about association already, pulling in related topics, okay, other subjects, okay. We can talk about the fourth side being analysis. So when you're handed a prompt, oftentimes there will be several questions in the prompt. We need to break those down. What is the question really asking? What information do I really need to provide to give an adequate answer to that question? If you don't know what the question is asking, it's very difficult to answer it properly. Okay? So analyzing, breaking your questions down into component parts can be really helpful. Last two things, actually. Apply the question. So if I'm considering Hector as leader and I'm going to look for an application, I might look for examples where he is being a leader in the text. Okay. So where can I find him actually in action doing these things so that I can look at the how, right? The application of, or if I'm saying, if I'm making a certain argument about the Homeric hero having certain qualities, I might look for instances where the Homeric heroes, Achilles or Hector, Agamemnon, whoever you want to list, Diomedes, whoever, where do they enact those principles of heroism that I'm discussing? Okay. And the last thing is to compare. Compare it to something else. You can work with metaphor and figurative language in academic essay writing, okay? And I encourage that. Look for ways, how is it like something else, okay? Homer uses similes all over the place. I'll do questions at the end if you want to hold your question. So comparing to something else, okay? All right, so those are sort of for those of you who are kind of like to approach in a logical way by breaking down and synthesizing, analyzing and then synthesizing your thoughts on something, that can be an effective method. So let's talk about two other methods now for my auditory learners and my kinesthetic learners. Okay, auditory learners means you like to listen. If you sit in class and you do more listening than writing down in your notebook, you probably like listening and learning by auditory. You just like to absorb, you're like a sponge, right? So I have kind of a fun, funky method for you if you like that. You have your phone, put your voice notes recorder on, get in your car or lock yourself in your room and talk to your phone. You're like, oh my gosh, Dr. B, very strange. But it works. It's free writing, but you're talking to yourself. It actually does work. It really actually does. I've started doing this a lot more, partly because I'm in my car a lot more, and I can't really write in a notebook, which is my preferred method to do things. So I've had to learn how to use the voice notes thing. And it is weird, and what's weirder is when you get back to your room and you go to write and you plug your headphones in and you listen to yourself babble on and on about whatever Hector as leader stuff came out of your brain while you were going through this process. The other option, if you're kind of a little not sure about the whole recording your voice and then listening to yourself on playback, when you will go through and pull and start organizing, by the way, that's the playback is essential. We gotta organize what came out of your mind. Group your buddies together and go sit down and riff. Okay, just talk to each other, bounce ideas off, take a notebook, jot some stuff down. Okay, but talking through, if you are a talk through person, if that's how you deal with problems, if that's how you like to handle things, if that's how you think best, then do the talk through, okay? You have permission to be weird and talk to yourself on your phone. It's all good, okay? It's all good. All right, so those are some things. And you need, of course, the part of that that's going to be sort of a constraining aspect of this is that you need to go back and take your notes and organize your thoughts, okay? We do have to have some sort of organization process that happens after our creative mind explosion happens, okay? All right, what about if you're a kinesthetic learner? Last method, okay? If outlining just makes you nuts, like having to make a list, try note cards. Try note cards. The cool thing about note cards, you write your topics, it's basically doing this or making an outline, but you write each of your points on a card. The way that this can work well for kinesthetic learners is you set them all out on the table and then you can rearrange them. It's like playing with a big puzzle. You can put them in order. You can switch up the order. You can figure out, where do I have gaps? If I have 10 cards in my pile over here from my first paragraph and I've got one for paragraph three, I know, I visually see I need more information over here. Got to do something to build that up, right? And you can organize it that way. Play around with the organization. I use this for my dissertation. I organized my research this way. I had note cards with quotes and different things. And yes, I had color-coded them by subject. You know, so I had a little mark, a highlighter. You can use different color cards. You can use a highlighter in the corner for your different topics. But like, I would literally have like my dining room table sprawled out with cards as I was organizing chapters, subsections, and different things, and it worked, right? It worked. It's very popular with screenwriting and with creative writing as well because you can move scenes around. It's very easy to manipulate creative sort of things like that. So if that works for you, if you're a kinesthetic learner, if you enjoy manipulating things like that, then note cards might be a good way for you to pre-write. And again, what is the point of all of this? These are not an end in and of themselves, let's not forget. Okay, these are a lot of cool tools to use, right? Some kind of fun and funky things that probably nobody ever told you about before. It's not an end in itself. The goal of pre-writing is to give you enough material so that when you sit down to actually write your paper, that cursor doesn't evilly blink at you, just taunt you with, I have nothing. You have nothing to say, right? And we've all faced that, right? That the tyranny of the blank page is the most terrifying thing. When you feel like you have nothing to say, pre-writing, effective pre-writing will eliminate that for you, okay? All right. It also tells you where you need to build up your argument, where you're weak in your argument. Tells you where you need to expand your consideration. Where do you need to pull more evidence from the text? Where do you not have enough? Okay, so you don't get to that, I'm a page and a half in on a 3 or 4 page paper and I have nothing left to say. Horrifying, right? And then I start with the filler. I start with the just whatever I can narrate. Just go to the narration. Let me set this scene really well for you. This part where Helen and Aphrodite are having their showdown. I'm gonna really lay that out for you really well. And then I have one little sentence at the bottom where I kind of tell you what I really want to say about this scene. Why does that happen to us? It's very natural. It's because we go to where we're comfortable. We go to where we feel like, okay, now I'm filling out. It looks okay. It's the paragraph is substantial enough. It looks okay on the page. But in fact, it's air, right? It's not substance. So we need to make sure. This pre-writing process will make sure you're equipped to handle your argument. And that you're not, honestly, a slave to the text, okay? The text is there to support your argument, not the other way around, okay? If you are constantly narrating, your voice and your analysis, your thinking on the topic is not coming through, right? We know Homer, right? We don't need the rewrite. We need you to approach the text and give us what your thoughts are, okay? So you have the text support your insight rather than the text overwhelming your voice and your insight, okay? All right, and of course, to help you to organize your thoughts so that you can write efficiently, honestly. If you do effective and thorough pre-writing, I guarantee you your writing process will be faster. You will sit down, you will have it out there, you will know exactly what you need to write, where you need to put it, where you need to go in the text to pull your evidence from, it'll all be there. You will find that you will move through your essays quite quickly. Yes, you'll take some time on the front end to do the pre-writing, but you'll move quickly. Okay, so that's the point of the pre-writing stuff. Okay, again, it's not an end in itself, it is a tool to be used. And you need to find what process is gonna work for you. So experiment with it, blend things, you know, try different things. Try different things for different subjects. Sometimes different topics will lend themselves to one version of this or another. And don't be afraid to mix it up. Just use what works for you. All right, so now let's talk about my other favorite side of the process, which is the revision process, okay? If you do awesome pre-writing, and you do good writing, and you don't go back over your paper, it is not gonna be as excellent as it could be, right? And rewriting, revision, is not just proofreading. Okay, I'm not just talking about making sure your commas are all in the right place. That's the last step of the things that we're gonna do, okay, when we talk about revision. All right, so really the magic happens in the rewrite. Every professional writer will tell you the magic happens in the rewrite. Nothing ever happens really in the first draft except you get everything on the page in some form that is sort of discernible as an essay or whatever, okay? You just get it done. Then you go back and you dress it up, okay? So the classical medieval arts of poetry would tell us this is the dressing. The text, okay? Think Cinderella going to the ball, right? The rags are the first draft, okay? When she's in rags in the garden, that's the first draft. When the fairy godmother, which is you, shows up with your wand to make her beautiful at going to the ball to impress the prince, which is your professor, right? That's the process, the making the beautiful, beautiful Princess Cinderella, okay? The skeleton is there, right? Cinderella, beautiful inside, just needs a little bit of help outside to be really stunning, right? That's the whole point of the Cinderella story. She's already beautiful inside. So your pre-writing makes sure that she's beautiful on the inside already. The structure is there, the skeleton is there, everything is there that needs to be, the substance, right? The revision process helps you just make sure that it is going out to the ball in the most fantastic way possible. Crystal slippers and all, okay. So the first step in revision process is to trick your mind. Why do I say trick your mind? Because if you've been writing an essay for 5 hours and it's 3 a.m. and you are scrolling back up to the top of the page and you're gonna reread and you're gonna proofread your paper, right? That's the whole goal. It's 3 a.m. and you're like cross-eyed because you're so tired and it's your fifth cup of coffee in as many hours. Your brain is gonna go on autocorrect. We do this. We automatically fix, we gloss over mistakes. We put in the missing words where they're supposed to be, even though they're not really there. We fix the misspellings because our brain just goes right over it. We wrote it, we know what we're trying to say. It really does happen. We go right over what was messed up. We really do. So there's a few things you could try to trick your mind into thinking, I've never seen this piece of writing before. I've never seen this. Let's see what's wrong with this piece of writing. Change the font is one. If you're writing in Times New Roman, make it Comic Sans. Don't turn it in like that, please. Your professors will be like, what is this, Comic Sans? Evil font. But it is so different that it will make your mind think, hey, I've never seen this before. It's just enough of a difference visually to kind of jar you into unfamiliarity, okay? And that's what we're going for. You can change the font size also if you don't want to mess with the, again, make sure you put it back, Times New Roman, 12-point font, double-spaced, etc. Okay? You can change the font color. Make it easy to read, you know, don't do some like neon color that's gonna give you eye strain. Dark blue, dark purple, something that stands out, okay? Another way, which is sort of the classic way to do this, is to print the thing out and go at it with a red pen, okay? Again, you're changing the medium, okay? You're taking it off a digital screen and you're putting it now on a piece of paper. You can read it aloud to yourself. Again, if you're auditory, if you're taking it from the visual to the auditory, you will hear when you've messed up the commas, when you've repeated he twice in a row. Hector, when he stands in front of the wall, okay? And that does happen. We just accidentally typed the wrong thing, okay? You'll hear it. You'll be like, oh, I didn't mean to write that. Oh, scratch that, right? Okay, read it aloud. If you're really brave, read it aloud to somebody else. That's scary, okay? It's very vulnerable. Share your work with somebody else when you're reading it aloud and you have to be ready for them to say, that doesn't make any sense. But it's good, because you want your friend to tell you it doesn't make any sense before your professor writes on there, oh, it doesn't make any sense, C-. Okay, whatever, okay. And we're trying to catch this stuff before it gets to the grade. Okay, so that's the first step. Trick your mind. Remove it from the familiar, make it something new so that you can see it fresh and go over it. Try not to do it in 3 a.m. right after you finish writing it. Try to let it breathe for a little bit, okay? But if you have to, then use one of these strategies. All right. I would strongly recommend several passes through your work, okay? And I know everybody's going, oh, it's bad enough, I have to write the thing. Now you're telling me I gotta pre-write. Now you're telling me I gotta do 3 passes through my writing. Oh no, I'm never gonna finish my papers ever. I'm gonna be stuck in writing forever. But again, what are we looking for? What's the goal? The goal is to turn in the most beautiful, send Cinderella to the ball looking as fantastic as she can be, not to send her in rags to the prince who's going to throw her out, right? Okay, so the first pass through, we're going to look for substance. Okay, we're going to check our editing level of substance. It's what we call macro edit. Okay, we're gonna go through, make sure your argument makes sense, okay? Look for completeness. Make sure that everything is there that needs to be there. Make sure it's in the logical order that it needs to be, right? Think about building an argument as like building a house. If you're trying to put the walls up before you've laid the foundation, it's gonna collapse on itself. Same thing here, okay? We need, you know, every argument is going to have a logical progression of the steps that needs to happen, so we're checking for that. By the way, this will reveal whether you actually have a solid thesis and an argument to make. So don't panic if you read through and you say, I don't know what I was talking about. What was I even saying? I was gonna talk about this. I got lost somewhere in the woods and I don't know where I am. That's okay, everything can be fixed. That's why we do a draft. You can go back and you can fix it. Go back to your pre-writing. Figure out, ask your questions, figure out where you went astray, and just build it back up, okay? Everything can be fixed. That's why we do drafts, okay? Check to make sure your argument matches your thesis statement. It's very important, okay? So make sure that everything is consistent throughout. And make sure that you have enough textual evidence for each of your points, So those are the things we're looking for in a substantive edit, in a macro edit. We're checking the argument, we're making sure that skeleton is in place and strong. The style edit, which we might combine if we're crunched for time with a proofreading, which is the third pass, the style edit is where you really get to shine. This is the fun part. This is where you make sure that you've chosen the right words in the right places, okay? Style. Making sure that you've used strong, vivid, active, powerful imagery, words, phrases, verbs, especially verbs. Evil being verbs and helping verbs and passive voice and no. We want active verbs, we want power, we want good, solid, sparkling writing. We want to make sure we've used some figurative language in good places. Okay, so if there are spots where you could work in a good metaphor or simile, an allusion to something else, resonance is awesome if you can pull it off, right? Resonance is that sort of like picking up on like this thing in Plato and this thing in Homer, and it's like touching a string and you hear the other string kind of like hum when you do it, you know, that's resonance, right? Okay, so if you can pull off resonance, that's really exceptional. Okay, so look for those things where you picked up on common threads or themes across disciplines. Look at those. Now, I will say that style depends on substance, okay? So if your skeleton is weak and can't hold up the huge ball gown that Cinderella wears, she's gonna fall down. It's not gonna work, okay? It's not gonna be lovely. The substance has gotta be there. That's the primarily important part, okay? But style shouldn't be underestimated either. Okay, this is what takes a good, solid B-level paper to the next level, right? This is really what sets you apart as a writer. And it's also where your voice and your personality come through. Everyone has their own expression. Everyone has their own way of looking at and analyzing things. This is where you kind of get to use that, you know, and I really encourage you to look for ways to express your own vision of these texts that we're working with. Okay, we're all reading the same things. You know, so where you distinguish yourself is these kinds of the ideas that you have, the thoughts that you have, and the way that you put them across. Okay. All right. We are also going to look for ways to eliminate dragging, redundancies, repetitions, where we're narrating and we narrate the same thing again, just change the word order around a little bit, because we're in that place where we're running out of things to say, so I better just kind of like, if I just rephrase this, something new is gonna come out of it. And if I just try to rephrase it one more time, like something brand new is gonna come out of this. Okay, so look for those places where you're just struggling with refashioning the same thing over and over again. Recognize that that's a place where you need to maybe go back and look at the substance and see if you can build out a little more, okay? We're also eliminating overgeneralizations. If you start your paper on Hector as a leader with Homer was the greatest poet in the human history, that's gotta go, y'all. It's gotta go, okay? That has nothing to do with this. It is not even defensible, because I'm gonna argue with you maybe, okay? We need to funnel down, but that's like too big, right? That's like trying to funnel down to, you know, a coffee cup by starting with the stars or something, okay? We need to eliminate those kinds of way too large overgeneralizations. Okay, what about purple prose? What do I mean by purple prose? Anybody know that phrase of purple prose?
That going to be something to the effect of alliteration?
Could be alliteration. Could be like way overdone alliteration, right? I can't even think of something off the top of my head that would work, but you would know it if you saw it, hopefully, right? We're reaching for an artistic expression and we end up going a little out of bounds. Moderation in all things, right? As Aristotle would say, it's good here as well. Beautiful does not mean completely overdone, right? It doesn't mean we need to be dripping with quarter-sized words when nickel words will do. The best chosen word may be the simplest word, honestly. You know, if I mean run and I'm saying he's galumphing, I mean, it's maybe run is better. I don't know. Maybe run is better in that context. Okay, so stylistic edit, we are looking to eliminate things that are not necessary, but we're also looking to make it beautiful. We're looking to, we're looking at something that, you know, you might also look at, and is especially evident if you're reading aloud, is structure. Does every sentence start with the exact same construction? He went to Troy with his men. He sat in the assembly and heard the arguments. He went then to the plains of Troy to fight a new battle. He got all the way to the ship. Okay, I've started every sentence with he and a verb. And that gets to feel like I'm a little bit on like a Ferris wheel thing that won't stop, right? Or that I need a different direction. I need to change that up a little bit, okay? So again, the level of style. This is something that you get a lot of practice writing essays here. We do a lot. We give you a lot of writing, okay? It's an opportunity to grow as a writer. So, you know, kind of use that as an opportunity to look at, how can I grow as a writer? How can I look at making these things beautiful? Let me try something different. Let me try something, see how it works, okay? The last thing that you'll do, of course, is the proofreading. Okay, that's where you check your MLA, you check your commas, your quotation formatting. Make sure everything's back in Times New Roman 12-point font, black ink with 1-inch margins all the way around with your proper header and page numbering and all that jazz when you've messed it up and put it in Comic Sans in blue and, you know, everything else. 14-point font. We want to make sure it's all back to where it needs to be, okay? So that's the last. Okay, so I'm sure that many of you are thinking, I don't have time for that. I really don't have time for that. I have like 5 papers that I need to write. I don't have time. And what about the in-class essay? Like, how am I supposed to do that in an in-class essay, right? Some of you have class essays coming up with me. So you can take like 5 minutes at the beginning of class and do a quick pre-write. Just jot down a couple of points. It could be a bullet list. It could be anything. You know, just jot a couple things down. Definitely read over your in-class essays. Don't ever, like, you know, try to leave yourself a buffer of about 5 to 10 minutes, at least to catch the grammatical stuff if you can, okay? Try to buffer yourself a little bit, right? And as far as the out-of-class essays go, time management, right? You know, we're all given the same amount of time. We're all placed here, right? We have to, as Frodo says, decide what to do with the time we're given. And that means, you know, deciding how best to work our process so that it works for us, okay? Decide how you're going to do that, okay? It does take time. I'm not going to lie. It does take time. It does take time to pre-write. It does take time to do these editing passes. It really does. But it's worth it. The payout will be worth it, okay? It really will. You'll see your writing grow, okay, as you kind of work through this. These are tools. Writing is a craft, right? So, you know, it's meant to be practiced and it's meant to be perfected. All right, and I would just say too, as you're kind of thinking about where to spend your time and is it really worth it to kind of spend all this time revising and rewriting your papers and pre-writing and setting up, every time you're given an essay prompt here, it is an invitation to join a conversation. You're invited to join a conversation with your peers, who are all in the same classes as you are, for the most part. It's an invitation to a conversation with the text that you're reading, and it's an invitation to a conversation with your professor, actually, who's really actually interested in what you have to say, because we haven't thought of everything. We're not up here because we know all things. We don't, really. We're genuinely interested in what you all have to say, right? Fresh insight, new ways of looking at things. It's awesome. It's very exciting. That's why we do what we do, right? We want to have this conversation, okay? So it's just kind of an encouragement that these things are worth it. And learning to communicate powerfully and persuasively is going to serve you well no matter what you do in life. So that's my little, like, stump speech about, you know, learn how to write well so that you can, you know, rule the world someday or something. Okay. All right, so I will open it up for questions at this point. If you all have questions about process, anything else you want to ask. Yes, sir.
Not get the third side of your cube.
Oh, the cube. Yes.
Okay, so side one was an argument born against. Mm-hmm. Side two was describing what is going into the topic and who's involved and associated.
Yes.
And
then the third is associating, making connections to other subjects or topics. So in the instance of Hector as leader, we might connect it to the topic of fatherhood, or we might come at it from a different angle. So that's the third. The fourth is analyze, apply, and compare. Okay. good, thank you. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am, you had a question from earlier.
Yeah, I was wondering, how would you describe the difference between the third side of that cube, which is association, and the sixth side, which is comparison?
Association is more you're drawing connections between two things. You can draw connections when you're comparing, but often comparing will also involve contrasting. So really, you know, you're kind of, it's all used to build a whole vision of a topic. So you're trying to come at it from a number of different directions. So I would say the main difference there between making those connections to related topics and then comparing and contrasting would just be that added element of differentiating as well as drawing similarity. Okay. Yes?
And also, is it a matter of scale?
Yeah.
The first time, you might be associating things within the text, but the sixth time, it's like, well, how could someone else approach this topic differently? Mm-hmm. Like, what would Plato say?
Yes, yes, that's also good, yeah. Yeah, and you can feel free to do that. You know, we encourage thought, you know, across discipline. That's kind of why you're here in this curriculum, is because of that reason. So if you're inspired by something, you know, if you're talking about in the Odyssey ways of governing in the city, and you wanna resonate with stuff that's going on in your class on Plato's Republic, that's awesome. Like, bring those concepts. It all goes into your mind. It all informs how you approach something and how you approach a text. So don't be afraid to step outside of that a little bit, okay? Just, you know, we don't want you necessarily going to research other things, but if you're informed by these different things, then go ahead and draw on that. Okay, any other questions, process, or? Yes, sir.
How would you go about evaluating
What do you mean? Can you clarify? Yeah.
How would you go about adopting the mindset of someone who is not you?
I see what you're saying.
And evaluating that way.
Yeah, it's difficult to get distance from our own work often. And that's one of the reasons I suggested to let your paper breathe for a little bit. If you can get a little time distance from your work, it can help. Because you're not coming off of that adrenaline rush of getting the words on the page. You know, when you're emotionally tied to it like that, it's very, very hard to be objective. If you can have the time, you know, try to plan out your writing. So maybe you do your pre-writing one day, you do your actual draft another day, and then you come back to it a day or two later to kind of polish it up. You can get a little bit of distance from it. I mean, it's still difficult because it's your writing, and you tend to be a little precious about your own stuff, right? We all do that. We all tend to be a little like, I want to think my stuff is good. I really do. But that can help. Getting a little bit of distance time-wise from it can help. Reading it to your peers, as scary as that is, can also really help, because they will help you get that objectivity, because they're sitting there and they're listening and they haven't heard your stuff before. That can help, but it takes a little bit of, you know, willingness to set aside the personal, like, this is not a personal insult to me if you're critiquing my work, right? So if everybody's gonna exchange papers, like, don't just sit there and have them just do your paper. Like, you know, come on, you read yours next. You know, it's fair game. So set up like a little writing workshop that can, you know, that can maybe help you a little bit too.
And I just want to know, you know, plus the writing lab.
Yes, exactly.
That is what the writing lab is for. They are listeners that are there. And you're going to get the most out of the writing lab if you bring in the skeleton.
Yeah, if you bring in the
someone with clothes. Not just
right, exactly.
Okay, let me just review this. You bring in the skeleton, that's hard to work with. You bring in someone with the bouffant gown, with the bronze hat, and that's when it gets to be fun. You know, you get the couturier response. Well, you know, no, you really need to lose the big the genius in front or whatever. I mean, that's what the tutors love to do. Whereas if you just bring in half a body or the corpse, or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully don't bring in a corpse. Hopefully your writing is living, yes. that's, thank you. Yes, thank you for mentioning that. I meant to mention the writing lab. Absolutely, take advantage. You're not always going to have a writing lab, which is why you need to learn how to do some of this skill set, but absolutely use it while you've got it. And you'll always have friends that, you know, you can bounce ideas off of, hopefully, but definitely take advantage of that, definitely. Any other questions about the process? Try to invest the time. I know it's tough. I know it is tough. You get slammed with a lot. I've been there. I know, okay, I've been through this, and it took me a long time to learn. So learn from my mistakes, right? As we all like to say, kind of learn from where, you know, it's taken me years to kind of get to the point where I recognize that my first draft is going to look like a rag muffin, and it's okay, you know, and I can go back and fix it. So, all right, any other questions before we close out? Yes, sir.
Okay, so the practice had told me that you, like, needed to know your writer before you start writing. So then, like, how much information should you bring in from the book as like a summary? What's like the level, what's a good line? Because often like times I put in too much information, other times I haven't put in enough.
So yeah.
I'm just like, I know it's not like a definite answer, but.
Yeah, it's it is a tricky balance. You need to give enough to kind of ground the reader. Whatever is going to help you understand the point that you're trying to make, whatever details need to be there for me to understand where you're going with it. Often what happens when a professor is going to say you're just narrating here, it's because your voice is getting lost in the setup of the text. Okay, so if I'm going through and I'm trying to explain Hector as a leader, and I'm talking about him being outside the walls and rooted there because of the fates, and I go through almost my entire paragraph setting up what he's like outside the gates, how he runs from Achilles, and how this happens, without actually framing that in my own argument. What is it that I'm trying to say about that moment, right? That is where we sometimes get into trouble, okay? It's where the narrative will take over the analysis of the text. So, yeah, it's not a hard and fast rule. I think in general you want to get enough to ground the reader of the essay in the moment so that they are equipped to understand your point. Right, so they need to understand your argument, and that means, you know, keeping what you have to say as the primary focus is kind of the key thing, I guess, if that helps to answer the question. It does take, it takes practice, you know, you learn, and that's part of when you get your papers back and you've got to revise them, that's, you know, that's part of that process. That's an excellent question. Yeah, all right, we'll wrap it up. Thank you so much all for coming, and next week we'll have another talk. Thank you.